Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Not an increase, but getting back what has been lost. That is what some striking doctors in Britain are saying for the reason they are protesting. On Monday, 40,000 junior doctors started a three-day walkout, demonstrating against their salaries and overall work conditions. Now, these doctors followed others from various professions protesting their job conditions. In a very un-English move, teachers to postal workers to public transport staff and beyond, Brits have waged industrial strikes. Now, the British are not like the French, who are known for protesting. So when the Brits take to the streets en masse, things must really be bad. Well, I'd like to welcome my guests to the program out of London. Bob Gill, NHS campaigner. And Shabir Rezvi, economic and political analyst, also out of London. Thank you both for being with us.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, let's start this off with Bob. These industrial actions started actually last year by railroad industrial employees, and we've seen strikes spread throughout various sectors of the society, and now the doctors have joined in. I mean, your perspective in general, why are we seeing the amount of these actions, and why now that we're seeing in a society that usually really is not big into en masse strikes?
Thank you. Yes. So I think the background is more than a decade of austerity following the 2008 financial crash. The public sector has witnessed a suppression of wage growth such that health workers have experienced up to a quarter of their income lost in real terms. So a doctor working 10 years ago was earning 25% more than a doctor equivalent now. So on top of that, we've had 3 years of pandemic and most recently a cost of living crisis with rising inflation, rising rents and rising energy costs. So a combination of factors has led doctors and other health staff to say enough is enough and we want a restoration of our pay so we can, you know, cope with the cost of living. So it's taken a lot to push people who, as you describe, are generally quite tolerant and passive, for them to not only strike but vote for strike action with an overwhelming majority. So there was up to 90% of doctors voted for industrial action. Now that's quite some mandate for the unions to act. Hmm.
Wow, up to 90%. I mean, Shabir, what does it mean when we're talking about 40,000 junior doctors walking out for 3 days? What does it mean for the patients, for the whole medical situation there. And what does it mean for them? It just seems like such an act of desperation.
Hello, Asia. It's lovely to be back.
Nice to have you.
Program. Look, the situation, as our colleague from the NHS described, that the tragedy is that it's particularly the medical profession, the junior doctors, who in UK work between 70 to 80 hours a week. They're on long shifts, they do unpaid overtime, and the pay that they earn for having gone to university and studied for 5 years plus, by the time they're 25, 26 years old, they're probably earning only about £35,000, if you like, which is not a huge amount when you think, as I said, the amount of hours that they have to put. Alcoholism is very high. Sort of mental well-being is another sort of challenge that junior doctors face. And the other sort of interesting aspect is that a lot of junior doctors, after qualifying, really go off to Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, or the Middle East, or West Asia in the Gulf countries, where they can earn more money. So the reality is that the health profession, particularly the junior doctors, have been pushed in a corner, and they had to take this action, as our colleague has quite rightly pointed out. It's not just in real terms that their incomes have been reduced significantly, but the reality is that inflation is very high in UK, and as you know, last year, industrial action was a defining moment in 2022, and with no signs of letting up in 2023. We are in the first quarter of this year, and tomorrow, our Chancellor, the Finance Minister, will be announcing his new budget, and many industries will not be working tomorrow on budget day, whether it's doctors, teachers, university lecturers, and rail workers. So 15th, tomorrow, is going to be a big day, not only for the fiscal measures government may be announcing, but also for the sort of industrial action by the workers.
Well, Bob, Shabir said tomorrow is going to be a big day. Are you expecting perhaps the government to give in somewhat? I mean, in general, why have we seen the government not being responsive to the needs, it seems, of the not only the doctors, but so many other people in various professions when they're so much under pressure?
Well, I think the underlying ideology of this government and successive governments has been that of neoliberalism. What they want to do is privatize public services. And in order to make the public services attractive to private corporations, part of that is wage suppression. So they have done the dirty work on behalf of largely multinational corporations who are moving into the NHS, and they want a very lowly paid and compliant workforce. So our government has been doing the dirty work on behalf of American multinationals, insurance companies, and provider chains. Their healthcare industry is coming in and encroaching and due to take over the NHS. But the other factor that is really demoralizing the medical profession is that they can no longer work in a safe environment. We have an NHS that has 40,000 nurse vacancies, at least 10,000 doctor vacancies. We have overstretched A&E departments. We have in excess of 500 excess deaths per week. So the NHS is on its knees. If the government does not satisfy these pay demands, then you're going to carry on seeing the exodus that your other guest has mentioned, exodus out of medicine or out of the country, making the situation worse, and ultimately, in the long term, that is a tragedy for patient care in this country.
Well, Shabir, I mean, if that is the case, what Bob has said, why isn't it more of a priority for the UK government? What the government is saying is that it simply cannot afford to give the doctors and others what they are demanding, and it would add to the double-digit inflation. Your thoughts on this?
Well, look, the government keeps on talking about that there's no money. Famously, Theresa May, who was our prime minister some years ago, said that there is no money tree when it comes to sort of paying low-paid workers or compensating the doctors in a proper way and the nurses so that they can manage cost of living crisis, inflation, and all those. But when money is required for Ukraine, money is found from somewhere immediately, and billions have been sent there. Secondly, if money is required to bail out the banks, as it was done in 2008, is found. And currently with the sort of Silicon Valley bank debacle taking place in the USA, again, bailout is taking place in the USA, and here also the branch of Silicon Valley Bank has been rescued by HSBC. So it's interesting, as our colleague said, that this government for the last 13 years that it has been in power has applied austerity measures in such a vicious manner that it's really making the people feel the pain of living and managing themselves effectively in the United Kingdom. Secondly, what they have done, they have applied, as quite rightly pointed out, the neoliberal economic model where the so-called entrepreneurs are given all the opportunities and profits are privatized and bailouts are sort of, become part of the social fabric where the taxpayer has to pay them. So that's the reality of this government's ideological drive by which they are sort of trying to bludgeon the working people in the United Kingdom so that they don't make much noise. And when privatization takes place, they will feel that, oh, at least we have got a job. And that's what I think is the real battle that is taking place here in UK at this moment.
Well, Bob, you mentioned about neoliberalism earlier. I mean, is this what we're seeing, basically the implosion of this neoliberal agenda? On the one hand, they want to make more profits. On the other hand, they can only pressure the people so much to their some blowback. I mean, your assessment of this at this point in time there?
Well, I wish the neoliberal project would implode. What we've seen is massive wealth transfer to the super rich. We have socialism for corporations, and you have hard, extreme capitalism for everybody else. So, what these companies are doing, they want to draw profits out of the state. They want to draw profits, guaranteed profits, out of the tax base. And that's what our governments have been enabling. So, if you transfer the whole tax base and hand this over to private corporations to skim away profit for their shareholders and CEOs, our governments, successive governments over decades, have been quite happy to allow this to happen. So we're having a sort of cannibalization of the state. And, we've deindustrialized. We've become very heavily financialized. We're relying on the bank, bloated and deregulated banking sector, which showed how dangerous that strategy was in 2008 when the banks crashed. But no lessons have been learned. And it seems like we're on the precipice, perhaps, of another crash. And who will pay the price? The ordinary member of the public, and they will pay that through inflation. They will pay that through asset price rises and the decimation of the public services.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Shabir, I mean, what does it all mean? Because we're looking at the UK. We know that it has basically given billions in dealing with the Ukraine war with Russia.
On the one hand, it finds money for an external goal. On the other hand, its people are basically begging for crumbs, practically. But it just turns its head the other direction. I mean, your overall assessment, what does it mean? So does it mean that this government actually is just for a certain selection of the people, the 1%? Are what is it exactly going on here?
Well, not only the United Kingdom that the government do the bidding of the 1%, whether it's a conservative government that has been in power or potentially the Labour Party who are expected to win the election when it's held, they both are really not much different and anymore. And they all do the bidding for the 1%. But what the important and interesting aspect of all this is that the 99% of the population that do have the power on the street somehow are being muzzled, somehow are being sort of hoodwinked into believing that, you know, tomorrow would be better. You know, politicians come and promise them change, but really no change occurs. And then what happens is that the ordinary people foot the bill all the time. But I'm really hopeful that what is happening globally at this moment and the Ukraine crisis is really just the tip of the iceberg of what is really happening, not in only in UK, but across Europe and across the pond in the US, is that the ordinary people will realize the power that they have amongst themselves to be able to get their rights. And you know, ordinary people are not asking for Lamborghinis and Gucci watches and Prada bags. What they're really asking for is bread on their table, keep their houses warm, and so that, you know, when they're ill, they can be looked after in a dignified manner. That's what they're asking. The rich and wealthy may want to buy 10 Prada bags and 10 Gucci watches and have a whole host of, expensive cars in their houses. But the reality is that ordinary people do not want too many things. They just want simple, ordinary, comfortable life with dignity.
Well, with that being said, Bob, because Shabir talked about this change or this perspective, what is happening that people, despite being under pressure, whether we're talking about the UK or US or some other countries, Western countries, despite being under pressure, they still believe that this change, this positive change is on the horizon and things are going to be better tomorrow, when the reality, if we look at the numbers, is that is not exactly the case, especially if things continue on the same path that they've been going?
I think the biggest problem is with our media. Nobody's explaining this to them. As Shabir pointed out, we have political parties that you can hardly tell any difference from, so these arguments are not being made. And at the same time, we're being distracted with external enemies. Supposedly Russia's our external enemy and China's our next external enemy. And we have all this scapegoating of immigrants and minorities. So the public are distracted. They're divided on cultural issues and they're kept in the dark about what the real political agenda is. So, you know, the chances of me getting onto mainstream British broadcaster are next to zero, because they do not want my message to get out there. So social media and other platforms are the only way to do this. But we do not live in an open democracy. We do not have a free and fair press, and we do not have impartial broadcasters. We have a very controlled, propagandized nation, which is, you know, hoodwinked and indoctrinated to divide and rule between themselves, and also always fear some external enemy, whereas the biggest enemy to prosperity in this country is our own government.
Well, Shabir, how likely is it that with the reality that is taking place on the ground, that we will see more of a radicalization of the public? As I said in the beginning, I mean, the Brits are not really known for taking to the streets, but are they getting more like those across the channel? And the French, I mean, it appears that people can only take so much pressure. Do you see a future radicalization of the public, or no? Will they just continue to acquiesce?
Look, I think at the super point made by our other guest is that it's the media, it's the sort of the chattering classes who do the bidding of the ruling elite, the 1%. And that sort of digresses the ordinary people from really understanding who the enemy is. And obviously the cultural wars are another digression, whether it's LGBT issues or whether it's gender issue or whether, you know, all kinds of host of issues which really don't have an impact on people's life, but we keep on continuing on that debate and really not challenge the ruling elite for what they're sort of inflicting on ordinary people. I mean, your sort of view that across the channel in France and Italy, people have demonstrations. But, you know, the UK population sometimes is regarded as a bit docile as to coming out on the streets. But they do come out on the streets when it's required. Just to remind your viewers that, you know, 2003, when Iraq was going to be attacked by the NATO forces, Britain and the USA, over a million people came out on the streets. Yes, no one heard their voice, but people did come out on the streets. And then during, you know, just before Margaret Thatcher got elected in the late 70s, we had a winter of discontent where there were demonstrations. We had a three-day week in the United Kingdom over 40 years ago, which sounds a long time ago, but we had those kinds of situations. And then again, to get rid of Margaret Thatcher's poll tax in the United Kingdom, people demonstrated in huge numbers, and then she had to sort of actually change that policy. So Britain sometimes may not come out as quickly as the European counterparts, but when they do come out, it does have an impact. And I think that's what needs to happen, that more mm-hmm. people should come out on the streets to challenge the government and its policies.
So with that being said, Bob, do you think that people coming out on the street is really having an impact if these industrial strikes, industrial actions continue? Can it have an impact, or will it be, just like Shabir said back in 2003, a million people took to the streets and were against the Iraq war, but at the end of the day, it didn't really change the reality?
I think it can have an impact, but the forces who are genuinely fighting what's going on in this country need to come together. We have unions within the health union who are calling for strike action on different days. Well, that makes no sense whatsoever. We need coordinated industrial action. We need progressive forces on the left to unite and provide some leadership. We don't have that at the moment. We have a vacuum. So if our side can get organized and coordinated, then we have every chance, particularly if the junior doctors have a successful industrial action. Well, that will put the government on the back foot. We need some sort of victory to motivate the rest of the population to fight okay. back.
All right. And on that note, unfortunately, we're out of time. I appreciate both of you being with me. Bob Gill, NHS campaigner and producer of the Great NHS Heist out of London, and Shabir Razvi, economic and political analyst, also out of London. Thank you both. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا
ودعوتك ربي بقرآن جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان ودعوتك ربي بقرآن.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآله محمد وعجل.
Assalamu alaikum, respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quranic Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. Here we are again with Brother Ali Nasir, Brother Hussein Ruhullah, Brother Hassan Nasrullah, and Brother Fawad Haider. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. How are you?
Alhamdulillah.
Everyone is fine?
Yes.
Okay, alhamdulillah. So, welcome, brothers. So, today, inshallah, brothers, we will work on Ayah 27 of Surah Ali Imran. And inshallah, we'll practice the recitation, the reading, and also we will practice the tajweed rules. Okay? Everybody, let's once listen to the recitation of this ayah.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Tuliju al-layla fin-nahari wa tuliju an-nahara fil-layl wa tukhriju al-hayya min al-mayyit wa tukhriju al-mayyita min al-hayy. وترزق من تشاء بغير حساب.
الحمد لله. Nice recitation. Now I will read once, then we will recite, practice the recitation, okay? أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. تولج الليل في النهار وتولج النهار في الليل. وتخرج الحي من الميت وتخرج الميت من الحي وترزق من تشاء بغير حساب. Inshallah, we'll practice the tajweed rules, okay? Ready? بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
تولج الليل في النهار وتولج النهار في الليل.
تولج الليل في النهار وتولج النهار في الليل.
وتخرج الحي من الميت وتخرج الميت من الحي.
وتخرج الحي من الميت وتخرج الميت من الحي.
وترزق من تشاء بغير حساب.
وترزق من تشاء بغير حساب.
أحسنت. ما شاء الله. ما شاء الله. تولج الليل في النهار. This ayah is talking about some of the attributes of Allah Almighty. Okay? Like the same as the previous ayah, which ended this way. إِنَّكَ عَلَى كُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَدِيرٌ. Or the beginning of the ayah. قُلِ اللَّهُمَّ مَالِكَ الْمُلْكِ تُؤْتِي الْمُلْكَ مَنْ تَشَاءُ وَتَنْزِعُ الْمُلْكَ مِمَّنْ تَشَاءُ وَتُعِزُّ مَنْ تَشَاءُ وَتُذِلُّ مَنْ تَشَاءُ بِيَدِكَ الْخَيْرُ إِنَّكَ عَلَى كُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَدِيرٌ. We talked about some of the attributes of Allah Almighty. Yes, the attribute of, like, He is the owner, He has the power, like these things. In this ayah also, Allah Almighty talks about some of His attributes. O Allah Almighty, You are the one who what? Tuliju al-layla fi an-nahar. You make the night pass into the day. It means the night changes to day, day changes to night. Okay, for example, today, for example, the day lasts, for example, for 12 hours. Yes? Tomorrow, for example, 1 minute lesser than yesterday. This way, okay? The time of the day is lessened and the time of the night is increased this way, okay? These are the things that Allah Almighty do, yes? Allah Almighty does these things. So, تُولِجُ اللَّيْلَ فِي النَّهَارِ وَتُولِجُ النَّهَارَ فِي اللَّيْلِ. You make the night pass into the day, and you make the day pass into the night. وَتُخْرِجُ الْحَيَّ مِنَ الْمَيِّتِ. Okay? وَتُخْرِجُ الْحَيَّ مِنَ الْمَيِّتِ وَتُخْرِجُ الْمَيِّتَ مِنَ الْحَيِّ. You bring forth the living from the death. It means you give life to death. Okay? You give life to
death.
A death person. And also you, what?
Bring death.
Bring
to,
death.
To a alive.
To a live person. Thing. You give death to a live person. Okay? And you bring forth the living from death, and you bring forth the death from the living. وَتَرْزُقُ مَنْ تَشَاءُ And you provide for whomever you wish, بِغَيْرِ حِسَابٍ Without any reckoning. And you bless people, وَتَرْزُقُ مَنْ تَشَاءُ You bless whomever you want, without counting, countless or numberless. It doesn't mean that you cannot count the number of the things that you give to people. It means so much.
Okay? Infinite or...
Yeah, like so much. So much, yes. Unlimited. Numberless. So, guys, this ayah talks about some of the attributes of Allah Almighty. Okay? One of the attributes is that Allah Almighty is the one who passes the night into the day. Okay? Who makes the night pass into the day and also day into the night. And also He gives life and He gives death. Okay? These are all in Allah Almighty. بِيَدِكَ الْخَيْرِ It's all in His power. All right? So, during the history, there were some of the people, okay, who were claiming like they are the ones, okay, who give life to people. One of them was this Namrud, okay, that we had the story like some days ago, that he was saying that I am the Lord, yes? Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam said, no, you're not the Lord. My Lord is the one who gives life to dead bodies, okay? And he said, I can do it the same. He couldn't do. And he said, Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam said that if you are the Lord, okay? So my Lord brings sun from east and make it set to the west, okay? Can you do it? He said, shocked. I can't do it. Yes? He couldn't do it. So he was claiming he is the Lord. And God forbid, okay? So look how Allah Almighty answers them. Brings good reasons, yes? To understand. Maybe he's making a mistake, okay? So, guys, may inshallah Allah Almighty help us understand His attributes well and inshallah believe in them. Tawheed and Sifat is very important.
هذا القرآن يوحدنا لطريق الخير يوجهنا الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا ورسول الله معلمنا هذا القرآن
Want to learn Quran at home? Join us in our Quranic class. Let's recite the Quran.
So, let's continue with the Tajweed rules. تولج الليل في النهار. The first thing to mention is the pronunciation of some of the letters. Yes, Ali Nasir?
Yes.
What letters we should pay attention?
First is the letter waw.
Waw. Waw has to be pronounced correctly. Not a v sound we don't have. Like the letter V in English. We don't have that in Arabic. So?
Then we have letter ha.
Ha. Great. Ha. Finnahar. Uh-huh. Next one. Do you think kha is important? Yes. Takh wa tukhriju. Heavy letter.
Yeah.
Ra. Ra. Sometimes it has... Finnahara ra. What is sorry? Nahari, we have light sound. Nahar, watulijun nahara, heavy sound. Okay, next one.
Then we have letter ha.
Ha, ha, hay, ha.
Then we have letter qaf.
Qa, uh-huh, heavy sound.
Then we have letter
hamza.
Hamza.
Tasha'u. Right?
Yeah.
And the last
Ghain.
One? Ghain. Ghayri hisab. So, these letters must be correctly pronounced. Then, let's practice the other rules, inshallah. Tulijul. Make sure you pronounce the U sound, the long vowel sound. Tulijul. Don't read it. Tulijul. Tulijul. We have a waw there. Tulijul layla. Layla has a lean sound.
Yes.
Lean sound. It means A sound. Layl. Layl. Soft A sound. Fi has a long vowel sound, yes? Ya mad. Fi, then annahar. Noon is one of the sun letters, yes? So you skip lam, also skip hamzatul wasl, you also skip
the mad.
Ya mad. So fa, you directly join fa, the letter fa, with the letter noon. Fi, fin, finnahar. تولج الليل في النهار وتولج النهار في الليل في الليل the same right في الليل skip the mad صلة حسن tells you it's better to
continue
صلة وصل is better than وقف and we have also قلة not in this ayah but it's just the opposite of صلة قلة tells you
better to stop
but you can continue. Both in both of them you have the permission to continue. But it's better to continue in Sila, it's better to stop in Qila. You can also stop at both of them, but it's better to stop in Qila, it's better to continue in Sala. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Watuch Rijul Tuch Kha has a heavy sound. Don't read it Tuch Tuch no Tuch Watuch Rijul Hayya Hayya من الميت. Pay attention to the تشديد, okay? The شد sign. وتخرج الحي من الميت. وتخرج الميت من الحي. وتر ترزق. The letter را has to be pronounced with a heavy sound. وترزق من تشاء بغير حساب. من تشاء نون ساكن إخفاء hide the sound of the نون ساكن here من تشاء a nasal sound also وترزق من تشاء مد
is واجب
is it واجب to stretch it
yes
for
yes.
six counts okay why
because ألف مد and
حمزة
are in
are in the word. Same word the yes, word تشاء So tasha is one word, hamza and alif mad are in the same. So in the same word, tasha'u bi ghayri hisab, ghayri I sound right?
Yes.
With a heavy letter, ghayn, ghayri hisab. When you stop here, the tanween of ba changes to sukun, and the letter ba is a sakin ba, and the rule qalqala, echoing sound, must be applied here. So. حساب right
yes
Hussein read this ayah once with tajweed rules
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم تولج الليل في النهار وتولج النهار في الليل
نهارا
وتخرج الحي من الميت وتخرج الميت من الحي.
Do not stretch the ميت. No, do not stay here. ميت, right? Okay. وترزق.
وترزق من تشاء بغير حساب.
أحسن حساب. Thank you so much, brothers and sisters. Thank you so much for being with us. Thanks for listening to IRIB English Radio. Please stay with our English radio. Inshallah, in the coming sessions, we'll have also our Quranic sessions. We'll continue, inshallah, to the next ayat, inshallah. So, Hassan Hussein, Ali Nasir, Fawad, thank you so much for being with us today. And see you in the coming session. Thanks to IRIB English Radio and also Sevier International Schools for cooperation. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma. صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم
Let's recite the Quran. A joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools. ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور
صفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian-administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
People in the Gaza Strip rallied in front of the Red Cross office on Monday to mark this year's Palestinian Wounded Persons Day. The annual event pays tribute to Palestinians who have got injured during Israeli wars and aggressions. Thousands of injured Palestinians suffer from permanent disabilities caused by Israel. Wounded Palestinians say Israel's crimes will continue to go unpunished as long as the regime is under the protection of Western countries.
Our injuries always remind us of the criminal Zionist enemy who left us scarred for life. The Israeli crimes against the Palestinian people started in 1948 and continue to take place until this day. The world, especially the Western countries, must stop assisting the Israeli regime.
During the 2014 war on Gaza, Israeli forces killed over 2,200 Gazans, including women and children, and injured more than 11,000. In May of 2021, over 2,200 Palestinians were injured, including 685 children and 480 women. The wounded people in Gaza are also suffering from the Israeli blockade, which has created a harsh humanitarian situation in the region.
Gaza Strip, during the last years, witnessed different escalation, which caused so many wounded people who are suffering due to their injuries, severe injuries, and in the same time, the socioeconomic conditions due to the blockade.
Wounded Palestinians in the blockaded territory struggled to cope with their injuries due to a lack of specialized medical facilities to cater for their needs.
We are calling on the international community in order to exert pressure on Israel, first to stop its offensive on the Palestinian people, and also to end this illegal blockade, to let in the medical instruments and equipments and medicine to Gaza Strip in order to help these people who are in bad need for surgeries and medical treatments.
Medics say Israel's use of unconventional weapons during its wars and aggressions has increased the number of severe injuries among Palestinians.
Israeli regime forces have killed and maimed thousands of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, including women and children, since 2008. Experts say the international community must end its apathy to Israeli crimes. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
A comprehensive cooperation roadmap aimed at expanding bilateral relations and 7 MOUs to boost trade and cooperation in transportation, agricultural, and cultural fields. The result of Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko's two-day visit to Tehran, celebrating three decades of close ties between Iran and Belarus.
The visit can be considered a turning point in our bilateral relations. It's an opportunity to share our experiences. We have made remarkable progress despite the sanctions, and we have turned threats into opportunities. We are ready to share our experiences with our friend Belarus.
We're both on the same page. We both agree that a multipolar world is emerging. Iran has made great achievements despite Western sanctions and has turned into an important player in the region and the international arena. There's a lot that we can do together.
The high-level talks between the two sides also included a pledge to increase trade volume to $100 million per year.
Both countries are determined to improve their relations and trade. The economic relations between Iran and Belarus are not comparable to the past.
This is the third visit ever to Tehran by a Belarusian president and the first in 17 years.
Belarus and Iran enjoy strong relations, which is reflected in frequent high-level meetings and various agreements. Belarusian officials have described Iran as a strong partner for their country in the region and in the world. Gisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
A leading critic of Israeli aggression against Palestinians, David Miller, who was sacked from his professorship at the University of Bristol in 2021 after a sustained campaign by Britain's Israel lobby targeting him, has addressed a group of Iranian students at the IRIB University in Tehran. He said Western spy agencies in association with the Western media outlets are to be blamed for unrests and riots in various countries, including Syria.
And MI6 also played a key role in the creation of the Free Syria Army and what was termed in British propaganda terms the moderate armed opposition in Syria. And the most shocking thing, I think, is the involvement in the managed massacre of captives in order to present evidence of chemical weapons attacks by the Syrian government.
Moreover, Miller said that the recent unrests, which erupted in some parts of Iran following the death of a young woman, were orchestrated in advance by the United States and the Israeli regime.
The hybrid war strategy against Iran, against so many other enemy states, is led by the United States via a myriad of assets and outlets. One of the key elements is what might be called the small media strategy. U.S. funds are channeled directly and indirectly to a variety of independent media and citizen journalism or media defense organizations.
Miller, who is also the producer of Palestine Declassified show on Press TV, has repeatedly come under attack by Israeli lobbies in the UK for supporting Palestine and revealing the true face of Israeli regime and its Western allies. Although David Miller has been sacked from university and has been repeatedly pressured by Israeli lobbies, and there are efforts underway to undermine and smear his name and reputation, he believes such attacks will simply strengthen his resolve to continue the fight. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Creating a world where untold stories are told and unheard voices are heard. The annual IRIB World Service News Awards, dubbed SOAP Media Festival, this year had a lot to celebrate.
It's been a few years that the dynamics are changing and the new world order is emerging. The unipolar world is now turning into a multipolar world. Iran is in a position where it can speed up this process and offer a third viewpoint different from the two narratives that have always existed.
Words that clarify the mission of IRIB World Service. And this is exactly why the Arabic news channel Al Alam swept the IRIB World Service News Awards, taking home wins in nearly every major category, with its sister channel, Al Alam Syria TV, maintaining front-runner status with its popular talk show, Zoom Room.
We are proud to be able to gain a strong foothold in Syria and West Asia in particular by shedding light on the truth and covering stories that are untold about people who have been misrepresented.
I've been with Al Alam for more than 8 years now. I have hosted many TV programs.
It's great to be part of a team where the goal is to bring truth to light.
Meanwhile, the Spanish-language news channel Hispan TV, as well as Press TV, were seen as the gold standard of achievement in the television community, winning awards in different sections, including the best documentary and the best news website. Not to mention that Press TV's Palestine Declassified won the best political TV show.
This is the moment we're in. We're in the end, the dying throes of Yusuf Hegemony. And as he was saying, I very much agree with, the cultural infrastructure for the ending of hegemony has to be put in place, and that involves media, including news and journalism, which can give a different view of how the world is operating and tell more of the truth about the world. So, you know, the media play a central, important role in all that.
Press TV correspondent Johnny Miller, who has covered the most difficult news stories, including the Rohingya crisis and the developments in Ukraine over the past year, was not left out.
I think two of my heroes, Noam Chomsky and John Pilger, said that they've never seen as much propaganda in the war in Ukraine than in any war that they've reported on or written about, and they've reported right back from Vietnam. So that's telling you a lot, and there's a huge amount of propaganda on Ukraine. Indeed, Ukraine is it's a civil war, but it's also a proxy war between Russia and NATO. And I think we're seeing the beginning of this split between the West and the East, China, Russia, Iran. And we're seeing a challenge to American hegemony and indeed the creation of this new multipolar world.
And according to the head of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, IRIB World Service is at the forefront of this propaganda war.
In this unequal war, where IRIB World Service has none of the advantages of mainstream media, from state-of-the-art technology to political support, it has been able to blaze a new trail. The fact that its news channels are frequently banned on different social media platforms is testimony to that. Meanwhile, this also proves in practice that the free flow of information and free speech are nothing more than slogans that are used as political tools by advocates of democracy.
Media play a key role in today's world. They can set the tone for diplomatic endeavors, and they are a tool of international communication. Particularly for the Islamic Republic of Iran, its media outlet can pave the way for diplomacy.
That is why there are great expectations, which means that so far, IRIB World Service has been able to deliver on its responsibilities.
In a world where mainstream media is setting the narrative, IRIB World Service has been able to break the monopoly and offer a new perspective. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
South Koreans opposed to upcoming joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises took their message to the presidential office. They worry the largest such drills in almost 5 years could lead to direct conflict.
Where did all the efforts for dialogue for each other go? We must stop the terrible threat that will actually lead to the devastation of nuclear war. We have to stop the battle without an exit. That's why we're here.
Last year, North Korea test-launched a record number of ballistic missiles, with the U.S. and South Korea routinely conducting their own missile tests and smaller military drills.
The large-scale joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises had been suspended under previous President Moon Jae-in. But that's not the policy of current President Yoon Suk-yeol, who seeks to strengthen the alliance with the United States with the frequent deployment of U.S. nuclear-capable forces.
The drills are set to include both computer-simulated war games and field exercises. North Korea views the drills as a rehearsal for invasion.
Currently, the South Korea-U.S. joint military exercise is going ahead, generating aggressive tension, and includes a preemptive strike scenario. Wherever there is such a military exercise, tensions on the Korean Peninsula increase.
More large-scale drills with the U.S. are planned for this year, as President Yoon seeks to celebrate the 70th anniversary of South Korea's alliance with the United States. Frank Smith, Seoul.
A ribbon-cutting ceremony to go down in history. opening the production line of Iran's first homegrown jet trainer, Yasin. According to Iran's defense minister, Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Ashtiani, the jet trainer is capable of carrying out combat missions as well as other tactical aerial warfare actions such as close air support or CAS, air-to-ground actions against hostile targets in close proximity of friendly forces.
Training good pilots is extremely important, and now with this homegrown jet trainer, we have technologically evolved significantly. This is considered a major step for our Air Force. The training period will now be shorter and more comprehensive.
Prior to this, jet pilot training was done outside Iran, and due to Western and U.S. sanctions, Iranian pilots could not receive training abroad.
We did ask for assistance, but no country in the world helped us. However, at the end of the day, it worked out for the best because we were able to develop the technology that we needed ourselves. Knowledge-based companies help us a lot. In particular, I have to point out the design of the engine and also its aerodynamic design. All in all, Yasin is about 800 kilometers lighter than our first prototype, which is a significant achievement.
Iran started designing jet trainers over 10 years ago. Yasin is the second generation of a prototype that was unveiled in 2019. The new version now includes state-of-the-art avionics, engine, landing gear, and full cockpit devices.
With all the equipment installed, this training jet is fully equipped and it can be used for training pilots in all different levels.
But there's more to Yasin than just training fighter jet pilots.
It is also a question of prestige. This jet trainer was made by our own scientists and inventors. Knowledge-based companies played a very important part. Obviously, it means great economic benefits, but other than that, it shows that we can stand on our own feet. This is the most important message.
In the next 2 years, three more Yasin jet trainers will be produced based on the requirements of Iran's Air Force.
Iran has made great achievements in the field of aviation, and this is a symbol of self-sufficiency of the Islamic Republic. Gisumi Shah Ahmadi, Tehran.
Despite the cold winter day, a huge turnout by thousands of NHS workers and their supporters calling for action in a dispute officially about inflation matching pay, but really so much more than just that.
It's about the fighting for the heart of the NHS, because we feel this government is not committed to the principles of the NHS, which is a free, comprehensive service for all. They are privatising it by stealth, and they're hoping that it fails so that they then can do even more privatisation.
There are concerns about public safety when there are fewer workers available on strike days in a health service already at breaking point, which speaks of a deeper crisis.
Been depleted of funds, staff are leaving, NHS pay has been cut in real terms, and because of this we're seeing staffing leaving. There's a staffing crisis. We cannot provide the care we want to give to our patients.
Similar action in recent months by nursing and ambulance unions seems to have forced the government to shift from its position on the amount of pay rises for this year, leading to some health unions to tentatively cancel strikes planned for this month. An 8-month strike wave that began last summer has seen industrial action across the public sector. Despite their impact, public support is still strong, especially for the NHS workers.
Just a regular person that loves the NHS, and I think everyone in the UK loves them, and we don't want to see the NHS in crisis.
Next week we'll see 3 days of strikes by junior doctors who have experienced a real terms pay cut of over 26% as the costs of food, energy and rent soar.
The demonstrators here today say while they share the concern about the impact of strike action on patients, they have to do it to safeguard the health service before it's too late. Site Tourism, London.
Iran's Shahid Rudaki warship, an unlikely but definitely meaningful location to hold the closing ceremony of the 17th International Resistance Film Festival.
Now, in these days, you know that the
films are more important even than the books. So it's very important.